Juno will likely file a competing petition to Petersburg's plans to form a borough, which would include land previously identified for annexation to the CBJ. The Assembly has directed city staff to begin the process of determining its response to Petersburg's petition and plans to spend up to $10,000 from the Better Capital City Fund to collect data for that response. Petersburg recently filed a petition with the Alaska Local Boundary Commission to dissolve the city and form a home rule borough like the city and borough of Juneau. While Juneau does not dispute the formation of a Petersburg borough, it does question the land and water to be included in the new borough's boundary. Mayor Bruce Botello says the city has several options, which will become clearer once more research is done and the public weighs in on the issue.
My recommendations to us are that we authorize staff to begin preparation of a responsive pleading, that we authorize the research, which I think will help dictate what it is we might ultimately determine, and that we create a situation where we have an avenue for the public to formally testify about whether they want us to go forward or not.
The Assembly next month will consider a resolution and hold a public hearing on the CBJ's proposed action. Juneau isn't the only town disputing Petersburg's proposed boundaries. More on that tomorrow on Morning Edition. Officials are puzzled by a thick sheen of oil with a diesel odor that appeared over the weekend near downtown Kodiak. Harbor Master Marty Owen suspects it's from a vessel that may have pumped its bilge after Saturday's heavy rains. He estimates at least 200 gallons of mixed diesel fuel and heavy oil were dumped. The Coast Guard also hasn't been able to pinpoint the source of the pollution. There have been no reports of distressed seabirds or marine mammals. Owen says the lighter diesel fuel has evaporated, but the oil has emulsified into a frothy mousse. It's washing ashore in the city's two harbors and along the waterfront. The Alaska Volcano Observatory has lowered the alert level for a remote Aleutian Islands volcano from watch to advisory. Satellite data over the past 2 weeks indicates that growth of the Cleveland Volcano Lava Dome has paused or stopped. U.S. Geological Survey scientist in charge John Power says the eruption appears to have been predominantly effusive rather than explosive and confined to the summit crater. He likened it to an oozing pile of toothpaste. The alert level was raised in July after satellites detected persistent thermal anomalies. No significant ash emissions were detected. Cleveland Volcano is 940 miles southwest of Anchorage. The volcano's most recent significant eruption began in February 2001 and produced three explosive events that produced ash clouds as high as 39,000 feet. Kathleen Sebelius is the latest Obama administration official to visit Alaska. The Health and Human Services Secretary is touring the state this week at the invitation of Senator Mark Begich. At Providence Hospital in Anchorage yesterday, Sebelius sat down with Alaskans who help provide medical care for state seniors. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
The roundtable event was focused on health care for seniors, but the conversation ended up covering many of the thorniest medical issues in the state. Top among those is the cost of health care. Pat Luby with AARP in Alaska brought up a recent statistic showing health care costs are 55% higher in Alaska than in Washington state. Secretary Sebelius agreed it's a problem.
I think we have to get a handle on what is that cost driver, because the gap is so substantial. But having said that, regardless of the gap between Washington State and Alaska, there's no question that health costs, as you know, have the underlying health costs, have greatly outpaced inflation.
Sebelius says her agency has been working to control costs in the Medicare system. She says Medicare spends more than $1 billion each day, and until recently, it had very limited tools for curbing fraud.
CMS, for the first time, was given a real directive and a whole lot of new tools to go after fraud.
Those new tools include the same kind of thing credit card companies have done for years, tracking expenses that don't make sense and stopping payment on them. She says last year, the anti-fraud effort saved the agency almost $5 billion. Sebelius also says the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's health care reform law, includes an important provision that will help Medicare adopt innovative pilot programs that help save money.
What the new law says, which is very different, is not only test these strategies, accelerate the testing as quickly as possible, but if you find that they are successful, take them to scale. That's right. Don't have to go back for permission. We don't have to. Right. We can actually begin to deploy these methods across the country. So that's never been there before, and I think is a critical piece of the kind of delivery system changes.
Many provisions in the Affordable Care Act don't take effect until 2014, but are in the works now. States are beginning the process of setting up health care insurance exchanges that will help the uninsured find affordable plans. Alaska was one of only two states that did not accept $1 million in federal funding to begin designing an exchange. Governor Parnell is suing the federal government over the Affordable Care Act because he doesn't agree with the individual mandate provision in the law. Sebelius is meeting with Parnell during her visit. She's hoping to convince him the state has a lot of flexibility in setting up the exchange.
So I'm eager to hear what the governor finds as his challenges, how we can be helpful moving ahead. I know that the debate about whether Alaska will run their own exchange or, in fact, defer to us is still underway, and eager to just hear how he's approaching it. But I think affordable, available health care for all Alaskans is certainly a goal that I would share with the governor.
Governor Parnell did not respond to a request for comment. If Alaska doesn't set up its own insurance exchange, the federal government will take over the process. Secretary Sebelius is one of several Obama administration officials who have visited the state this month at the invitation of Senator Mark Begich. The senator says it's the best way for officials to really understand Alaska. He has a few things he hopes Secretary Sebelius takes away from this visit.
So understanding when we say rural, it means you can't drive to it. Some days you might not be able to fly to it, and there'd be isolated communities. The second thing is that she recognizes that our delivery of healthcare system here is more complex than any state because of our distance that we have to travel. But the third thing is, I think she'll walk away with some innovations that we're doing here, some ideas that we hope to expand and also share with the rest of the country.
Secretary Sebelius is visiting the Alaska Native Primary Care Center in Anchorage and is also flying to Fairbanks, Barrow, Tanana, and Anaktuvuk Pass. She's the former governor of a rural state, Kansas, but she says she's prepared to come away from her Alaska trip with a new definition of what the word rural means. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski has announced additions to her staff. Tara Shaw takes over as legislative director, replacing Ed Hild, who was promoted to chief of staff after Karen Knudsen resigned. Shaw was working as an attorney advisor for the Department of Homeland Security prior to joining Murkowski's staff. She previously worked for former Republican Senators Pete Domenici of New Mexico and George Voinovich of Ohio. Also joining Murkowski's staff is Miles Baker, who will be legislative assistant for finance and budgeting. Baker was chief of staff for Sitka State Senator Bert Stedman here in Juneau and worked on budget issues and policy for the Senate Finance Committee, which Stedman co-chairs. U.S. Coast Guard Lieutenant Warren Wright will be joining Murkowski's Coast Guard staff as a Coast Guard fellow working on homeland security and air and maritime issues. Wright's career has included conducting Bering Sea deployments from Kodiak. Well, the price of benchmark crude oil for October is $88.31 a barrel this morning. Gold down a bit in early spot market trading, high price of about $1,834 an ounce. Silver also down a bit, about $42 an ounce. You're listening to Morning Edition here on KTOO. Senator Mark Begich says Congress must work to cut the nation's deficit while still creating jobs, or the U.S. risks falling into another recession. The Democrat told a Rotary gathering in Anchorage yesterday that a key part of deficit reduction will be closing tax loopholes. How to go about getting the nation's fiscal house in order will be a focus when Congress returns from summer recess. Skagway is the latest Alaska community to go smoke-free. Voters there passed an ordinance last week that outlaws smoking cigarettes in places of public employment. Fines for violators range from $100 for a first offense to $200 for a second violation and $300 for each subsequent violation. Smokers, as well as those operating establishments where smoking is prohibited, are subject to fines, says borough manager Tom Smith.
It's a part of our code, and the law needs to be enforced.
The ban took effect on Friday, but there were scattered reports of people lighting up over the weekend in places where smoking is now illegal. Skagway joins more than half a dozen Alaska communities, including Juneau, which already had smoking bans. Alaskans who filed for a permanent fund dividend during the first quarter of the year have until the end of today to add a charitable contribution through the PickClickGive program. Now in its third year, PickClickGive allows Alaskans who apply for dividends online to contribute a portion to participating nonprofits of their choice. Rasmussen Foundation Special Projects Manager Jordan Marshall says nearly 20,000 Alaskans pledged more than $1.5 million during the regular PFD filing season. The foundation is one of the sponsors of PickClickGive. Pressure bombs, plastic bottles filled with Drano, water, and tinfoil have been exploding around Juneau. Police have received several calls in recent weeks about the homemade bombs found in various places, the remnants of one near the road on Dudley Street just last week. There have been reports of explosions, then pieces of bottle and tinfoil found. JPD spokeswoman Cindy Brown Mills says the bombs apparently are easy to make.
Acids in the Drano react with the tin foil and cause a vapor. So what you're going to see is what looks like foggy stuff inside of the bottle, and then pressure is going to build up and expand the bottle, and then the bottle's going to explode. It looked like it happened pretty fast in the video that I watched. If they don't shake it and just leave it, and then somebody disturbs it, that may cause it to start.
Police say the pressure bombs can cause serious injury and even death. Anyone who finds such bottles should leave them alone and call police at 586-0600 or report previous incidents online at junocrimeline.com. In this week's edition of Court Watch, a profile of the state's Scientific Crime Detection Laboratory in Anchorage, where evidence from crimes around the state are processed. Lynn Anderson reports on the lab in this excerpt from a documentary that aired recently on KSKA Radio in Anchorage.
Actually, we're looking at two state crime labs. There's the new two-story V-shaped $87.5 million structure on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, scheduled for a June 2012 completion, and the current one, a squat, single-story building located next to the Alaska State Trooper headquarters on Tudor Road. Compared to its successor about six blocks away, a charitable description of the current lab facility might be compact, or as forensic laboratory manager Orrin Dim says, compressed.
We're a critical function where, you know, we have been, unfortunately, the hairball clogging the pipes of justice. It's not a pretty analogy, but it's pretty accurate. You have investigators in the field who are doing their job. We have a Department of Law who's doing their job. And things are getting stuck here at the crime lab because we haven't had the throughput to be able to handle it. Now, we're getting better, and we're getting more efficient, and we're bringing in robotics. And the last phase of that improvement is getting that facility up online where we can decompress and have a more efficient operation and have the ability to handle what's coming next.
When the current lab opened in 1986, it housed the Alaska State Troopers Crime Laboratory and the State Medical Examiner's Office and Lab. The combined staff numbered 8. The building's maximum efficient capacity is 20. That number was passed some time ago. The facility, now the Alaska Scientific Crime Detection Laboratory, and serving police departments across the state, as well as the troopers, houses a staff of 40. The medical examiner has moved elsewhere. A visit to the current lab reveals almost no room serving its original function and only a few administrative offices large enough for their assigned occupants. Dim says despite the overcrowding and severe space shortage, the reliability of the work done is never compromised. Other elements, however, are.
We talk about the cramped quarters, the question becomes, what about the quality? And this is why you keep hearing me talk about efficiency gains when we move to this laboratory. Rule one is the work has to be done to a certain quality level. So in order to accommodate that in an overcrowded facility, what happens is you lose efficiency. In other words, less work gets done because you have to do things like no more than two people can be in this lab at a time. This work can only be done under these situations. So because of the overcrowding, you have business rules set up that lower efficiency because you cannot lower the quality. When you come to this facility, those business rules no longer have to be in place, so you gain efficiency with the same quality.
The quality of the laboratory's forensic work shows, for example, in the arrests in two high-profile, long-standing, separate cold case murders, Bonnie Craig and Genevieve Tetpon, along with the arrest of Josh Wade for the killing of Mindy Schloss. And just a couple of weeks ago, Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Megan Peters announced one more example of that efficiency. This time, it was the conclusion of a 1991 sexual assault case involving a then 8-year-old Wasilla girl.
The suspect in the case is deceased, but there's been a DNA match that ties him to this case, and they've been able to go back and look into the history of it along with the DNA connection and decided that after this evidence has come about, the case is closed.
I was a commander out in Valley when that case occurred and watched that whole investigation go on and was intimately familiar with it.
John Glass is a retired Alaska State Trooper.
The satisfaction that I got seeing that the crime lab had found out who had done that case, I immediately called the initial investigator who did most of the work on that case, who has since retired and is living in the Auburn, Washington area. And, I mean, I made his day when I could tell him that the crime lab had solved his case of 20 years ago. I mean, that kind of stuff, is you can't really know how a person feels until you've been part of that system.
Besides his trooper career, beginning in 2007, Glass also served 2.5 years as deputy commissioner for the Alaska Department of Public Safety. It was then that Glass's relationship to the state crime laboratory changed from that of a trooper sending evidence to the lab. As deputy commissioner, he was tasked with promoting the construction of a new facility to the legislature.
New lab's been on the talking stages for years, but when I came back to public safety as a deputy commissioner in 2007, that was part of my job, was to try and obtain the crime lab.
What's it like seeing this staff?
The excitement on their faces and what they've had to work in over the years, and when they get here, it'll be just really gratifying, very gratifying. It's worth all the pain and agony that went into it.
Although Glass is no longer a deputy commissioner, laboratory manager Dim had invited Glass to come along on an initial tour of the semi-completed new facility with about 10 crime lab staff. The group were members of the chemistry section. Cabinets and basic workstations had just been installed in their future labs. I'm Len Anderson.
And you're listening to Morning Edition on KTOO Juneau.